Blog Talk Radio.
Some writers I know are damn devils. From them I say don't. don't believe the hype.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Good evening. It is March 31st, 2020, 7 o'clock on the East Coast. Welcome to another edition of the Anthony Experience. I'm your host. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus tonight. I've got a lot of things to cover, and I don't have a lot of time, so I may do phone calls at the end of the show. If not, just sit back and listen. I'm going to try to give you this information because I think it's very important that we talk about this. And don't believe the hype from the White House, because I think, my personal opinion, if the orange puss bag had done a whole lot more when this stuff was breaking out, instead of his usual stupid act, we wouldn't be in this position that they were in. And what I mean by that is that he was told about this virus long before it got here. And he did nothing. And he said stupid shit. It was only until then, when it started to affect him in his re-election chances, all of a sudden he wants that, like he's concerned. But before, he wasn't concerned at all. And I based this on, and I've got 5 clips for you to listen to tonight that are full of information. Been watching the news on this, reading up on it, I mean all kinds of stuff. For the simple fact that I am an essential employee, that means I have to go to work when other people stay home. Matter of fact, I have to go to work tonight. And my job is to watch things going on in the world, because I work for a firm that has offices all over the world. And we have to watch things that may affect the offices in these countries. I mean, when I say all over the world, I mean we've got offices all over the world. And I do remember that the last big crisis that we were concerned about was the fires in Australia. And these ended in, I want to say, sometime in November. And then all of a sudden, when the fires in Australia ended, that's when the coronavirus popped up. And I want to say this was in either late November or early December. Matter of fact, I've got a couple of clips talking about that. But your president was warned about this, and the last Klan rally that he had, he called it a, quote, Democratic hoax. And he pretty much said that this disease was created to keep him from getting reelected. And he said a lot of stupid shit since then, that it was, they were trying to sabotage the economy. They were trying to do this because they didn't blah, blah, blah. As usual, talking out of his ass because he has no idea what he's talking about. And while all this stuff was going on, he was doing his usual golf trips on the weekends. I was going to say golf field trips, but yeah, he was doing his usual golf field trips on the weekends, and doing absolutely nothing about it until it popped up. And then all of a sudden he got concerned. And come to find out before all this went down, we had a couple of agencies that looked out for stuff like this. Pretty much kind of what I do, looking out for things like this on the globe that might be a problem, and if they become a problem, then they would go check them out and then try to stop them from becoming a problem. Well, this clown decided he wanted to get rid of those people that were doing that job. And it's all been documented. But he will lie and say that it's not true. His minions will lie and say that it's not true because he has this thing jacked up. He's got so many people brainwashed, and he did it on purpose because, you know, the real news that we get on a nightly basis, that's the real, you know, real stuff. He calls that fake, and he wants you to believe everything comes out of his mouth. So when he said that this was a hoax, he wanted his minions and his fans to believe that it was a hoax. Well, I like to use common sense and critical thinking. It seems hard to believe for a hoax to make a lot of people sick and to kill a whole lot of people. It don't seem like a hoax to me. And then when the stock market tanked and people started losing their jobs, either losing their jobs or getting laid off or whatever, now all of a sudden there's an issue. Now all of a sudden, the government can find $2 trillion to do something where, you know, it's funny how this government works. Anytime when we were almost at war with Iran, we can always find money to start a war, and nobody asked where it come from. But the first time somebody says, hey, these people need medical help, where the money going to come from? Hey, these people need somewhere to stay. Where's the money going to come from? Anytime people need something, the first question out of somebody's mouth, especially these pinheads, where the money coming from? Now all of a sudden, we find $2 trillion under a mattress, and we've got money to give people so they can go out and spend or whatever. It's a little, you know, and then also with that, before the shit hit the fan, Republicans were calling everybody that don't agree with them socialists and all this, you know, they'll call them Bernie a socialist, they'll call them Democrat socialist. Now all of a sudden this money pops up. They might be getting a $1,200 or whatever amount money check, but now all of a sudden it's not socialism anymore. So which is it? Is it socialism, or are you going to return that check back once it comes into the mail or whatever? If it hits your direct deposit, are you going to send it back, or are you going to spend it? You can't have it both ways. So the stock market's crashing. The economy is crashing. Stores, I mean, I work at night, and I drive on one of the main roads here in town. Stores are closing up at 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. The mall is closed. So when I drive past the mall, lights are, you know, it's dark over that way. I mean, there are not a lot of cars on the street. The state of North Carolina has put everybody on a stay-at-home thing, which I can't stay at home. But I do have a paper in a security license to show in case I get stopped, which, you know, I doubt it, but if I do, I've got the documents to show I need to go to work. Like a lot of other people, you know, my daughter works at a grocery store. She needs to go to work. They're keeping the restaurants open. My son works at a fast food joint, so he goes to work. So, you know, we're all essential personnel. But there are a lot of jobs that are deemed, you know, people have to stay home, and now they got to stay home for another to the end of April. You know, I had planned on going to the beach just to, you know, get rid of some of the stress. Well, they closed the beach Sunday. So they pretty much kicked everybody out of the beach. Probably should have done that before, but I didn't. So now I got to wait until they reopen the beach. So, I mean, this quote-unquote hoax is affecting millions of people in this country, millions of people around the world. And if we had people in government that, you know, were serious about doing their job, you know, we probably wouldn't have this problem. We probably wouldn't be as bad as it is. You know, because it's funny to me, people complain about the government, but they don't mind getting jobs in government, and then when they get those jobs in government, all of a sudden they don't give a damn because, you know, they can, I mean, you could conceivably go into government with $2 in the bank and serve your terms or term or terms or whatever and come out millions of dollars in your bank account. Because a lot of people, all it is to them is just making the power and money. That's it. They don't care. And so you got who's allegedly the president of the United States, which is, to me, he's nothing but a game show host. All of this shit is over his head because he doesn't have a clue what he's doing. Man, I'm not worried about it. It's a hoax. And that's what he proclaimed at his last Klan meeting. So when everything went down, he was told he couldn't have all these people get together, so he comes on TV every day, mumbles a bunch of shit, don't know what he's talking about. We do know that he can't stand intelligent people, especially intelligent black women. He don't like them. You know, you have a doctor standing there right beside you. My thing is, I'm going to listen to the professionals. I'm not going to listen to Trump. I'm not going to listen to his fans. I'm not going to listen to his minions. I'm not going to listen to his lies. I'm not going to listen to Fox noise. And I get in arguments on social media about this all the time with his minions. Now all of a sudden, they're medical professionals. And the first thing they want to talk about is the flu. Who cares about this? This has got nothing to do with the flu. According to the doctor, because he knows his stuff, he said that this kills people 10 times more than the flu ever did. So I think I will get my information from people that know and not from pinheads that don't know. Because there's too many pinheads out there that think they know the damn thing and don't know what they're talking about. Because they listen to that clown and then they just regurgitate whatever he says. You know, and the mess gets to be, you know, to the point where you just want to tell the people just to shut the fuck up and get out of your face and just shut up about it. Because if my car breaks down, I'm going to take my car to a car mechanic, not a plumber. So I get my information from people that know, not from people that think they know. Because that clown thinks he knows, and he doesn't know a damn thing. He'd rather be playing golf. But his thing is, and the other thing that they're floating out there now is that, you know, old people, well, you know, if they get this and die, well, it's just one of those things. So they want your grandma and your grandpa to die from this disease because those are the ones getting hardest hit by it. But they want, you know, if they die, well, you know, the economy is more important. We got to get this economy back. So all they're worried about is money. They're not worried about nobody, you know, until it hits somebody in their family. That's why a lot of these minions, when they get on, you know, social media, spouting all that bullshit, you know, it doesn't matter to them until it hits somebody close to them or until it hits them. You know, until that happens, they don't give a damn. They're just spouting off whatever they hear because they think it's cute. A lot of times they think just by saying, repeating what he said, they think all that shit, there's nothing cute about it. And I just get to the point where he says something or if they say something, I just fact check him. So all this mess has created one job, and that's the fact checker job, because every time they say something dumb, all you got to do is pull out your phone and get on the computer or whatever and just Google it and get the information right there and get the truth right there, because a lot of this shit, you know, that's why they don't believe nothing they say. They say anything that don't sound right, just Google it. Just look it up. Just do a fact check. You know, because there are a lot of, it seems, sometimes there just seems to be more ignorant people walking around than are smart people. And then first thing out there, oh, that's fake news. No, it's not. No, it's not. The shit that you're spouting is fake news. You're just too stupid to know it. And nobody wants to hear it. Only people that listen to that fake news, you know, the fake news shit, are people of lesser minds and they think alike. So that's why they call real news fake and everything this clown says is real, because he's got them so fucked up in the head and so brainwashed that they don't know any better. And that's why I don't even argue with them anymore. It's pointless. It's like me trying to debate my 3-year-old granddaughter. Ain't nothing coming out of that, nothing good. She's going to win because she's cute. She don't know what she's talking about, but she's going to win because she's cute. And then it just gets to the point like, all right, you win. Yeah, okay, whatever. You want a cookie? And that's the end of the argument. It's the same thing with these clowns. When you try to give them the facts, they don't want to hear the facts. They're so used to bullshit that they just keep on bullshitting. It's like, you know, just forget it. Forget it. Forget it. And these are the same people that will have you believe that they made it through life, all through life, without asking for help. And then that $1,200 check hit their bank account, all of a sudden, you know, they just disregard all that mess. So, you know, my thing is, if you don't want the money, you can send it to me. Give it back. But you can't talk out of both sides of your neck. And that's what these clowns like to do. Like I said, I got five clips. I got a little over an hour to get everything. But I do want to say this, that at around 4 o'clock this afternoon, I went on. If you want to get some good information on what's happening in the world with the disease, if you haven't found out already, just go to the Johns Hopkins, put in Johns Hopkins coronavirus map, and it'll send you a link, and it's got a map of the entire world, and it's got everything on that map. It's got numbers, it's got, you know, and right now, the entire world is red. Now, there are a few spots, and but don't have it's not now. I'm gonna tell you right now, most of Africa doesn't have anything. Africa's just got a few cases, but most of Africa's got nothing. Iceland has got nothing. Iceland and Greenland, somewhere up north, they don't have anything. There are a few countries that have one case. Right now, America is sitting at most cases in the world right now, unfortunately. But I checked at 4 o'clock, and the total confirmed cases in the world right now as of 4 o'clock was 838,061. Total deaths were 41,494. Total recovered was 176,171. Right now in the United States, there are 181,099 cases. And New York had, up to that time, and it's probably more than this now, New York had 932 deaths. In the United States right now, there are over 3,720 plus deaths in the United States right now. And they're giving out a number on the news before I started to set this up. Between 100,000 to 240,000 could die. That's not saying that they are going to die, but it could happen. And those are facts from real professionals, not made-up stuff from pinheads that don't know what they're talking about. Like I said, North Carolina has been put on a stay-at-home. Now, that doesn't mean, I think a lot of people get this mixed up, that doesn't mean that you can't come out your house. Now, there were some reports in some countries that they were actually making people stay in the house. There were some reports they were actually nailing the doors shut so people could not leave their house. We don't have that here. I mean, you can go out to the grocery store, to the gas station, to get something to eat, doctor's appointments. You can do stuff like that, so you don't have to stay in the house. But they do want people to stay home. Now, what I'm doing, I'm washing my hands all the time. We've got hand sanitizer. I don't have hand sanitizer at home, but we do have it at work. So I wash my hands all the time, use hand sanitizer. I've got Lysol. I spray down surfaces here at the house. I don't go out and hang out with big groups of people. I keep 6 feet away from people if I'm in the store or whatever. Usually when I am at the store, I get what I got to get, and then I'm jetting. I'm not in there buying up all the toilet tissue, buying up all the paper towels and all that nonsense. You know, Jack, the thing about that, all the toilet tissue's gone, but the soap aisle is full of soap. So either these people ain't washing their ass, or, you know, their asshole is going to be real clean, but the rest of their body's going to stink. So I'm not understanding why people got to buy 300 rolls of toilet tissue. I don't get it. Unless they got a bunch of people that they live with, or, you know, if you got females living with you, you know, that could be. Because females use a lot of toilet tissue. And I'm not saying anything that people don't know, you know. And good thing about this, I live alone, so I've got 6 rolls. That should last me for a while. I need to, I just run out to the store and just get some. Well, there's certain stores you can get it at, but a lot of stores, you know, can't find it, which is just, you know, funny. And something I'm going to talk about next week, not next week, but probably in the coming weeks, is that you probably didn't know this. I didn't find out about this until yesterday. That I think back in December or January, that this country sent to China 17.8 tons of masks, gowns, gauze, respirators, and other medical materials to China when China was going through their thing. So how, and right now we're running out of stuff. We've got people, medical hospitals, in trash bags. So how the hell we got our people in trash bags, but we sent all that equipment to China? And we don't make stuff like this in this country, unfortunately. I worked in three hospitals. First hospital I worked in, the warehouse, which, you know, don't say warehouse, say logistics, because logistics sounds a whole lot better. I worked in logistics, which is the warehouse. And almost 90% of everything in the warehouse are materials that were made in China. This country does not hardly make anything at all. Everything you get, mostly everything in this country comes from somewhere else. So this clown knew that this stuff was coming, and he decided to send a lot of stuff to them. And now we're sitting here running out of stuff because we don't have ventilators, we don't have masks, we don't have gowns, we don't have stuff that, you know, we need because we sent it over there. And I read somewhere that that was probably done on purpose because I think there's some shady shit going on. I've got to finish reading up on that, but there's some shady stuff going on. And with that clown in the White House with his family, it would not surprise me one bit. But his fans don't see anything wrong with it because, you know, once you make the rules, you can break them anytime you want. The first clip I'm going to play for you, I'm going to talk about how coronavirus affects the body. Now, what I would recommend to you, too, that whenever you get a chance, you go to YouTube and just look for these videos, you know, the scientific ones where they show you, you know, you put coronavirus in, and it'll give you videos on, I know, how this disease affects people. You know, I'm going to play clips, you know, explain on where it came from and all this kind of stuff. But you could do the same thing, too, because it's very interesting. I pulled up some clips on how it affects the body and stuff, and it's real interesting how this affects you. Said it's like an upper respiratory infection. I had one of those before, and I had to stay out of work for a week. I felt miserable. All I can remember, I spent the whole week in bed because I felt like I was going to die. I don't know if I had pneumonia. Felt like I did, but I was really bad off sick. And this is pretty much how this disease affects people. I mean, it's really jacked up. But this so-called hoax is now ain't no joke. And, you know, it's just pitiful that we've got to have people dying because this clown didn't want to do anything. Matter of fact, the last clip I played, there's stuff floating around about Obama letting millions of people die because of H1N1. That's wrong. That's a lie. They know it's a lie. Anytime people bring that shit up, I just get on that and find, fact check it, bring it up, boom, and just shut them up real quick. I'm going to play the clip from the CDC where it explains everything that happened when Obama was in office and that stuff went down, how he took care of the problem, and how if the orange pus bag had left everything alone, we might not be talking about this right now. But because Obama did it, he's got to get rid of everything Obama did. He's got to blame Obama for everything. That's why this clown has no business being in charge of anything. So this first clip I'm going to play is going to tell you how it affects your body. So I think that's one thing we all need to know about, you know, symptoms and all that kind of stuff, because that's pretty important. So hopefully nobody, you know, has to go through that, you know. Nobody, you know, you listening or anybody you know won't go through it. But I think that's just, you know, good information to know. So let's hit the button. Be right back.
Coronaviruses are a family of viruses that cause sicknesses like the common cold, as well as more severe diseases such as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome or Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. A novel coronavirus is a new strain, one that has not previously been recognized in humans. Coronaviruses cause diseases in mammals and birds. A zoonotic virus is one that is transmitted between animals and people. When a virus circulating in animal populations infects people, this is termed a spillover event. It is speculated that the 2019 novel coronavirus, or COVID-19, originated in bats and was transmitted to humans, possibly with pangolins as an intermediate host. Unfortunately, COVID-19 is now spreading from human to human as well. COVID-19 has surpassed the SARS death toll in a matter of weeks. Even though the death rate is much lower, it spreads faster. Early data suggests that in around 82% of cases, symptoms are relatively mild. The illness begins and ends in the lungs. However, the remainder of cases are severe or critical, typically in older or immunocompromised individuals. How does COVID-19 affect the body? The virus is fitted with protein spikes sticking out of the envelope that forms the surface and houses a core of genetic material. Any virus that enters your body looks for cells with compatible receptors, ones that allow it to invade the cell. Once they find the right cell, they enter and use the cell's replication machinery to create copies of themselves. It is likely that COVID-19 uses the same receptor as SARS, found in both lungs and small intestines. It is thought that COVID-19 shares many similarities with SARS, which has three phases of attack: viral replication, hyperreactivity of the immune system, and finally, pulmonary destruction. Early on in infection, the coronavirus invades two types of cells in the lungs, mucus and cilia cells. Mucus keeps your lungs from drying out and protects them from pathogens. Cilia beat the mucus towards the exterior of your body, clearing debris, including viruses, out of your lungs. Cilia cells are the preferred hosts of SARS-CoV and are likely the preferred hosts of the new coronavirus. When these cells die, they slough off into your airways, filling them with debris and fluid. Symptoms include a fever, cough, and breathing difficulties. Many of those infected get pneumonia in both their lungs. Enter the immune system. Immune cells recognize the virus and flood into the lungs. The lung tissue becomes inflamed. During normal immune function, the inflammatory process is highly regulated and is confined to infected areas. However, sometimes the immune system overreacts, and this results in damage to healthy tissue. More cells die and slough off into the lungs, further clogging them and worsening the pneumonia. As damage to the lungs increases, stage 3 begins, potentially resulting in respiratory failure. Patients that reach this stage of infection can incur permanent lung damage or even die. We see the same lesions in the lungs of those infected by the novel coronavirus as those with SARS. SARS creates holes in the lungs, so they look honeycomb-like. This is probably due to the aforementioned overreactive immune response, which affects both healthy and infected tissue, and creates scars that stiffen the lungs. As such, some patients may require ventilators to aid breathing. The inflammation also results in more permeable alveoli. Alveoli are the location of the thin interface of gas exchange, where your lungs replace carbon dioxide in your blood with fresh oxygen you just inhaled. Increased permeability causes fluid to leak into the lungs. This decreases the lungs' ability to oxygenate blood, and in severe cases, floods them so that you become unable to breathe. Sometimes, this can be fatal. The immune system's overreaction can also cause another kind of damage. Proteins called cytokines are the immune system's alarm system, recruiting immune cells to the infection site. Overproduction of cytokines can result in a cytokine storm, where there is large-scale inflammation in the body. Blood vessels become more permeable and fluid seeps out. This makes it difficult for blood and oxygen to reach the rest of the body and can result in multi-organ failure. This has happened in the most severe cases of COVID-19. Although there are no specific treatments for coronaviruses, symptoms can be treated through supportive care. Also, vaccines are currently in development. So, what can you do to protect yourself from COVID-19? Advisories vary in different countries, but the basic protocol comes down to regular hand washing, avoiding close contact with anyone coughing or sneezing, avoiding unnecessary contact with animals, washing hands after contact with animals, thoroughly cooking meat and eggs prior to consumption, and covering your mouth and nose while coughing or sneezing. Respiratory viruses are typically transmitted via droplets in sneezes or coughs of those infected, so preventing their travel stops the spread of disease.
Coming soon. Should you wear a mask? And if so, what kind?
Okay, so I was listening to a radio show usually in the morning when I'm coming home, and they had Dr. Oz on there, and he said that washing your hands with soap, if you've got it on your hands and you wash your hands with soap, you can kill it. It doesn't like soap. So it's amazing to me that soap can kill this stuff, you know, but people are still running out buying toilet tissue when they should be buying soap. So that's why I wash my hands all the time. Just wash your hands, stay away from sick people, and you should be good to go. The next clip I'm going to play is very interesting. If you can find this on YouTube, look it up. I forgot to say that the guy in this, the first clip, he said something about, he said pangolins, something like that. It's not. It sounds like penguins, and they're going to say the same thing in this clip. It's not penguins. It's pangolins. I think that's how you say it. And they're like armadillos. They're not penguins. It's a four-legged thing. I've never seen it before, but it's over in China. And this is where the disease came from, because they do some stuff over there with those animals that we don't do over here. And this, and in this clip, you're gonna listen and you're gonna hear where this stuff came from, because it's, you know, because right before all this stuff went crazy on social media, people were showing videos of people eating bats. You know, there's this one video, I just went right by it, had this lady with a bowl of soup, and there was a bat in it. And she was, I don't remember if the bat was dead or alive, and she was about to eat the thing. I don't know if she ate or not. I kept going. But this disease has come from, you know, animals to humans, and then the humans spread it to other humans. So it's a hot mess. So I'm going to play this clip, and just like I said, remember, in this clip they're going to say something about a pangolins or something like that. It's not penguins. It sounds like penguins, but it's some kind of four-legged animal that looks like an armadillo. You have to look it up and get it and see what it looks like. But they do eat these also. So hit the clip. Be right back.
It was New Year's Eve 2019 when health officials in China admitted they had a problem.
Health authorities have activated their most serious response level
after an outbreak of a new type of viral pneumonia
in central China.
A rapidly growing number of people were developing a dry cough and a fever before getting pneumonia. And for some, it turned fatal. Doctors have named the disease COVID-19, or Coronavirus Disease 2019, indicating that a type of virus is causing the illness. When they tried to trace its origin, they found a likely source: this food market in Wuhan. Out of the first 41 patients, 27 had been here. It wasn't conclusive evidence, but Chinese officials quickly shut down the market. They had seen this happen before, at a place just like this.
The health officials are trying to get a grip on an alarming outbreak of SARS.
The virus originated in mainland China.
It has spread across the country.
The disease had been festering for months in southern China.
In 2002, a coronavirus had emerged at a very similar market in southern China. It eventually reached 29 countries and killed nearly 800 people. Now, 18 years later, this coronavirus is in at least 71 countries and has already killed over 3,100 people. So what do these markets have to do with the coronavirus outbreak, and why is it happening in China? A lot of the viruses that make us sick actually originate in animals. Some of the viruses that cause the flu come from birds and pigs. HIV/AIDS comes from chimpanzees. The deadly Ebola virus likely originates in bats. And in the case of the 2019 coronavirus, there's some evidence it went from a bat to a pangolin before infecting a human. While viruses are very good at jumping between species, it's rare for a deadly one to make this journey all the way to humans. That's because it would need all these hosts to encounter each other at some point. That's where the Wuhan market comes in. It's a wet market. A kind of place where live animals are slaughtered and sold for consumption.
it was not surprised at all, and I think that it was not surprised to many scientists.
Peter Lee is a professor and expert on China's animal trade.
The cages stack above one over another. Animals at the bottom are often soaked with all kinds of liquid animal excrement, pus, blood, or whatever the liquid they're receiving from the animals above.
That's exactly how a virus can jump from one animal to another. If that animal then comes in contact with or is consumed by a human, the virus could potentially infect them. And if the virus then spreads to other humans, it causes an outbreak. Wet markets are scattered all over the world, but the ones in China are particularly well known because they offer a wide variety of animals, including wildlife. This is a sample menu reportedly from the market in Wuhan. These animals are from all over the world, and each one has the potential to carry its own viruses to the market. The reason all these animals are in the same market is because of a decision China's government made decades ago. Back in the 1970s, China was falling apart. Famine had killed more than 36 million people, and the communist regime, which controlled all food production, was failing to feed its more than 900 million people. In 1978, on the verge of collapse, the regime gave up this control and allowed private farming. While large companies increasingly dominated the production of popular foods like pork and poultry, some smaller farmers turned to catching and raising wild animals as a way to sustain themselves.
At the very beginning, it was mostly peasant household backyard operation of turtles, for example. That's how wildlife farming started to get off the ground.
And since it started to feed and sustain people, the Chinese government backed it.
So it was imperative for the government to encourage people to, you know, to make a living through whatever productive activities they can find themselves in. You can lift yourself out of poverty. No matter what you are doing, that's okay.
But then in 1988, the government made a decision that changed the shape of wildlife trade in China. They enacted the Wildlife Protection Law, which designated the animals as resources owned by the state and protected people engaged in the utilization of wildlife resources.
That's one of the most devastating problems of the law, because if you designate the wildlife as a natural resource, that means it is something you can use for human benefits.
The law also encouraged the domestication and breeding of wildlife. And with that, an industry was born. Small local farms turned into industrial-sized operations. For example, this bear farm started with just three and eventually grew to more than 1,000 bears. Bigger populations meant greater chances that a sick animal could spread disease. Farmers were also raising a wide variety of animals, which meant more viruses on the farms. Nonetheless, these animals were funneled into the wet markets for profit. While this legal wildlife farming industry started booming, it simultaneously provided cover for an illegal wildlife industry. Endangered animals like tigers, rhinoceroses, and pangolins were trafficked into China. By the early 2000s, these markets were teeming with wild animals when the inevitable happened.
The latest on the deadly SARS virus, the worldwide death toll up again today.
China has reported more than 1,400 cases of infection nationwide.
It is what health officials have feared all along.
In 2003, the SARS outbreak was traced to a wet market here in southern China. Scientists found traces of the virus in farmed civet cats. Chinese officials quickly shut down the markets and banned wildlife farming. But just a few months after the outbreak, the Chinese government declared 54 species of wildlife animals, including civet cats, legal to farm again. By 2004, the wildlife farming industry was worth an estimated 100 billion won, and it exerted significant influence over the Chinese government.
Wildlife farming industry was tiny in China's gigantic GDP, but the industry has enormous lobbying capability.
It's because of this influence that the Chinese government has allowed these markets to grow over the years. In 2016, for example, the government sanctioned the farming of some endangered species, like tigers and pangolins. By 2018, the wildlife industry had grown to 148 billion won and had developed clever marketing tactics to keep the markets around.
The industry has been promoting, you know, these wildlife animals as, you know, tonic products, as, you know, bodybuilding, as sex enhancing, and of course as disease fighting. None of the claims can hold water.
Yet these products became popular with an influential portion of China's population.
The majority of the people in China do not eat wildlife animals. Those people who consume these wildlife animals are the rich and the powerful, a small minority.
It's this minority that the Chinese government chose to favor over the safety of the rest of its population.
This parochial commercial interest of small number wildlife eaters are hijacking China's national interest.
Soon after the coronavirus outbreak, the Chinese government shut down thousands of wet markets and temporarily banned wildlife trade again. Organizations around the world have been urging China to make the ban permanent. Chinese social media, in particular, has been flooded with petitions to ban it for good this time. In response, China is reportedly amending the wildlife protection law that encouraged wildlife farming decades ago. But unless these actions lead to a permanent ban on wildlife farming, outbreaks like this one are bound to happen again. For a bunch more information about China's wet markets.
Okay. So, basically what a wet market is it's a market where they have live animals in cages, and you pretty much, from what I understand, if you see something in a cage that you want to eat, you tell them you want it, they take it out, they kill it, dress it up for you, and then you take it home and you eat it. Now, we don't do that kind of stuff over here, but, you know, other countries do stuff that we don't quite understand. I don't quite understand that. If I want some meat, I go to the grocery store. They do that kind of stuff because they do that kind of stuff. And then you have conspiracy theorists all over the place. And the one that you know, is just stupid as hell, but, you know, considering where it comes from, that's where, you know, that the disease was created in a lab in China, blah, 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 you know. Give me a break. It's just, you know, people will believe stupid shit before they believe actual facts and the truth and everything else. You know, one thing I read somewhere, some clown, well, it was made in a lab in China to help get rid of Trump. We'll get rid of Trump at the voting booth. We want to get rid of him that bad. Why are we going to make something in China? Why can't we just make it over here? It's just stupid stuff like that. That's why I said earlier, you know, don't believe the stuff coming out. You know, if it sounds dumb, then it usually is something stupid. So don't believe that garbage. You know, use a fact check and get your information from facts instead of from people just, and a lot of times people just sit around and just make up stupid stuff because they've got nothing else to do. The next clip I'm going to play talks about, let's see, make sure I got the right pages here. So I think so. Oh, yeah. What I said earlier, Trump knew about this before it got here. He was told about this before it got here. So he sat on it until the shit hit the fan. And it's just, make sure I got this together. I'm reading this. I'm going to read a little bit of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Okay. All right. Make sure I got it right. But anyway, like I said, he was told about this months ago before it got to the point where it is now. Now, anybody with common sense would have done something about it. This was right around the beginning of the year. He had his mind and his minions and his fans and his supporters, whatever you want to call them, he had his mind already set, made up, that his main goal was to make sure that the economy kept rolling, that the unemployment rate was down, to help him get back in office. That's all he was worried about. He wasn't worried about anything else. So this probably came at the worst time for him. And that's, you know, his main concern was those things. He wasn't worried about anything else. So when he was warned about it, he made a joke out of it, and then he went to the golf course, like he always did. Now, I'm not saying he could have stopped it from coming into the country, but what I'm saying is that when you're in charge, when you're the boss, when you're the big cheese or whatever you want to call it, and you've got to take steps to protect what you got. And him getting rid of the department that handles this kind of stuff or whatever was just dumb. That's what I'm saying. He is in way over his head on this one. He has no idea what he's talking about. He has no idea what he's doing. He's got no clue. So in order for him to get out of it, He pretended to be dumb. Well, it's not hard for him to pretend to be dumb because he's already dumb. But he said that, you know, he didn't know anything about it. But, you know, according to what I've got here, and this was fact, this is off of PolitiFact. And the title of this, and I'm gonna read a little bit of this, and I'm gonna play the clip. Then I've got a couple more clips to play. Let's see, I'm on number 3, 4. Okay, I got 3 more to go. Was the novel coronavirus really sneaky in its spread to the United States? Experts say no. Members of the Trump administration had been sounding the alarm for months. Public health experts had been warning for years about the threat of a pandemic. Let me make sure I'm on the right one. Okay, number 3. Unveiling a series of policies meant to mitigate the threat of COVID-19, President Donald Trump also sought to respond to criticisms that his administration has been slow to deal with what is now a worldwide pandemic. In particular, the president defended his administration on the issue of insufficient testing resources and what experts say is a looming shortage of medical equipment and personnel. His argument, no one saw this coming. He said, it snuck up on us. He said this at a March 18th media briefing. Later, he added that the virus is a very unforeseen thing. Public health researchers had been warning for years about the threat of the pandemic, and members of his administration have been sounding the alarm for months now, even while just earlier this month, Trump was still comparing the virus's severity to the flu and arguing that it will go away if people stay calm. And that's why every time you... usually on social media, his clowns, his followers always comparing this to the flu. The doctor said, the only smart one in the whole group said that this was 10 times worse than the flu. So I'm going to listen to it next. I'm going to listen to the doctor. I'm not listening to him or his clowns. But they always throw that up in your face because they have no idea what they're talking about. Both in Washington and internationally, health officials have been warning about the dangers posed by COVID-19 since at least January, with some early signals along back as far as December when the illness emerged in the Wuhan province of China. Those warnings continued into February, well before the White House began taking serious steps to increase testing and treatment efforts a delay that experts said has significantly undermined the national response. Indeed, by mid-January, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar told the president that the virus, which had already spread through China, could pose a threat domestically, too, according to reporting by the New York Times, Washington Post, and Politico. Then, by the end of the month, Azar had declared it a public health emergency in the United States. According to the Times report, Dr. Robert Redfield, who leads the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, had also by that point realized that it had a great ability to go global. The alarm was sounded in January. At this point, researchers told us divisive and widespread federal action could have made a big difference. But publicly, Trump was still comparing the virus to the flu, downplaying the risk on Twitter and television, and declaring repeatedly that the virus was under control. And that's all he was worried about. And then it went on. He's talking about trying to reopen the country by Easter. And I'm going to play this clip for you, but I just want to say this. That Easter stuff, that's – you know why he said that, that I think he said that? To his base, to the Trump evangelicals. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do a show on that next week about the crazy religious people and this disease, because a lot of these people – are going to either make people really sick or they're going to kill them because of religious stupidity. And that's exactly what it is. But he said Easter to, you know, for his base. I call them PACs, phony-ass Christians, because they're not Christian. There's nothing Christian in them. Because, as you know, churches are closed because they don't want to have groups of people in it that could get each other sick. But there are some knuckleheads, you know. One guy, matter of fact, I'm going to do a story next week. Preacher in Florida decided he wanted to be an asshat, open up the church, and what happens? People get sick. He got arrested. Same asshat up in Virginia, that's Jerry Falwell Jr., known Trump. He's so far up Trump's ass, the only color he sees is brown. He opens up the college, backs up, and then students get sick. It's just stupid stuff like this. Stupid stuff like this. So he says he wants to open up the country by Easter when we don't have this under control yet, because he's trying to appeal to them. So you go out and buy your Easter suit, go buy your Easter dress. And that may be the last Easter program you ever go to in your life, because he's trying to appeal to a certain segment of his followers. That we don't know when this stuff is going to die down. So why are you going to risk your life going somewhere? It's like, you know, it might not be a good idea to get in a group of people, not knowing one of them has it, because what's the incubation rate on this thing? 2 weeks? So you don't have a clue? So he knew about this. And all he had to do was just to take some simple steps, and it wouldn't, you know, possible that we wouldn't be in the position that we're in. Let's listen to this clip.
This morning, a report obtained by the New York Times reveals the Department of Health and Human Services knew months before the coronavirus outbreak about severe inadequacies in America's response plan. The leaked document is dated October 2019 and outlines step by step how underfunded, underprepared, and uncoordinated the government was for a new virus like COVID-19. The simulation of a pandemic carried out by several agencies was dubbed Crimson Contagion. It specifically called attention to the scarcity of medical supplies, saying the U.S. lacks domestic stock for antiviral medications, needles, syringes, masks, and ventilators, noting that they're hard to restock in a global pandemic because they're manufactured overseas.
After the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, we did clear calculations and realized we would need to buy billions of masks.
Dr. Tom Frieden, who was the head of the CDC until 2017, says they were aware of problems, He says the agency warned the government several times since 2010. And this report in October wasn't the only recent warning. The Director of National Intelligence sent a warning about U.S. vulnerability in both 2018 and 2019. This comes as Senator Richard Burr, chairman of the Intelligence Committee, comes under fire for downplaying the coronavirus, despite the stark warning from friends nearly 2 weeks before the U.S. started taking steps to contain the outbreak.
It is much more aggressive in its transmission than anything that we have seen in recent history. It's probably more akin to the 1918 pandemic.
And who knew just months later we'd be dealing with a global pandemic. Now, the Trump administration said that they issued an executive order to improve flu vaccines in response to that study, Kenneth.
This is important reporting. It should not stop here. It should continue. Obviously, we're in the heart of this pandemic, and we're facing it. We're social distancing. We're doing all these things. We're so focused on that. But there are a lot of questions that need to be answered about who knew what and when and what can we do to make sure it doesn't happen again, because we know as human beings we have this tendency to kind of forget. What are we going to do this time next year? And so if we were warned, even our own contributor, Tom Bossert, who was part of the Trump administration, saying that he was part of that team that had a say about getting this country ready for pandemics. And so questions need to be answered, definitely.
We're definitely seeing it play out, the lack of medical supplies.
Right.
Okay. So this next clip comes from an actual doctor that knows what he's talking about. Because it is too easy to just pretend that you know every damn thing when you don't, especially if you're not medical. It's all of a sudden just about, medical stuff. And you don't have a clue to what you're talking about. That's why I'd rather, in this situation, get my information from people that know what they're talking about. And that's not some kind of weird thing. I mean, that's just common sense. You get your information from experts, not from people pretending to be experts. And there's just way too many people right now pretending to be experts when they have no idea what they're talking about. And they keep saying, a lot of people keep saying the flu. We don't have a vaccine for this thing yet. And so, matter of fact, there was one thing that's been spread around that if you drink like warm or hot liquids and all that kind of stuff, well, an expert said that that doesn't work because it hadn't been tested. So, people like that, it hurts if you do this. Or that, the other thing was that if you hold your breath for 10 seconds or something like that, well, that doesn't work either. So a lot of this stuff going around hadn't been tested, hadn't been, experts hadn't. So it's a waste of time, and it's jacked up to be telling people this stuff when it's not even, it doesn't even do anything for them. It's just useless information. So if this administration was told about this months ago, we're already into April. But why didn't they do anything about it? The Klan rally still went on. It's not true. It's not true. When the weather gets warm, it'll go away. It's a hoax. Blah, blah, blah. And now you see where we are with it today. So this next clip, we're going to talk. This is Dr. Fauci. And he's an expert. So let's listen to an expert.
Straight to Dr. Anthony Fauci. We are lucky to have you back on primetime tonight, Doctor. I hope you're doing well.
I'm well. Thank you, Chris. Good to be with you.
Question. You talked to the WHO, the World Health Organization. What perspective did you get? Just macro, lessons learned, and also insight into why us, Doctor? Why are we growing faster than other places that we assume we're better set up than?
Well, the insight you get is when you look at the different patterns of what happened in different countries, China versus South Korea versus what we're seeing in northern Italy. It really gives you some interesting insight into things, not only in the explosive nature in certain places versus others, but also as you start to get to your peak, when do you know that you're actually turning the corner? And the data we went over at the WHO call today, which was representatives from countries all over the world, was that you take a look at the number of new infections on any given day. So if 5 days ago, it was 600. And then 4 days ago, it was 800. And then 3 days ago, it was 1,000. You're going way, way up. It's when the new infections each day start to level off to be the same and then start going down. Then you see the curve go down. And that's exactly what certain countries like China and South Korea have seen. Italy is not there yet. Italy got hit really badly, almost certainly, and I think this gets to your question about us here in the United States, is Italy got hit very badly because they had a large number of importations from China by Chinese tourists. And before they even knew what was going on, there was enough baseline people spreading that it essentially got out of hand. And it became difficult for them, as good as they are, and they're very good, to be able to contain it in a way that is contact tracing, all that kind of thing. It was more mitigation. How do we deal with what we have? They're in a very difficult position. If you go now to the United States, we're a big country, and there are different patterns, Chris. Remember, weeks ago, the hardest hit part was in Washington State, and that was a cluster of nursing homes,
right,
and extended care homes. That was a different kind of thing than what you see in New York City, which very likely got seeded because New York City is a hub of influx of travelers, not only originally from China, but also from Europe, which has become the new China in the sense of the number of cases. So New York City is dominating the situation in the United States. About 60% of the infections are in the New York City metropolitan area, and 56% of the new infections are coming from the New York City metropolitan area. So you guys are getting hit terribly hard, and it's so unfortunate, but that's the reason why it looks like this big explosion, because it is what it is, whereas other areas of the country, although they're seeing cases, they're at different levels in that curve of kinetics.
Right.
But New York is right in the middle of it.
Until Louisiana. And now you have the Big Easy is getting crushed, specifically New Orleans. And all of a sudden they went from like 100 cases last week to now they're like 10 times that plus. What's going on down there?
It's the same thing. What it is that what likely happened, they've done it now. I mean, I have spoken to the political officials in New Orleans and in the state of Louisiana. They're now shutting things down in a very vigorous way. It is likely that that should have been done a little bit sooner, not blaming anyone on that, but you get caught unawares because the nature of this outbreak, Chris, that's so frustrating and in many respects, you know, a bit frightening and intimidating, is what you and I discussed, you know, several shows ago. It putters along and you think you're okay, and then it starts to go up a little, and then bingo, it goes up in an exponential way.
So
that's what's happening in New Orleans now.
So you got two different points of pressure coming from opposite directions. You have people saying, it's been long enough, Tony. You told me 2 weeks. I did 2 weeks. I can't do this anymore. I want to get back to work. We got to open up. Whatever happens, happens. And then on the other side, you have this pressure of, clearly, we have to do this a lot longer because the mitigation efforts aren't working. My brother, every other word out of his mouth is accelerating. You know, it's blah, 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 accelerating cases, blah, blah, accelerating pattern. So how do you deal with those opposite interests? We've done it long enough. We're frustrated. We want to get over this. And what you've told us to do so far, it's still accelerating.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, 100%, Chris. It's accelerating. And what you've got to do is that when you have a big country like this, you've got to look at it in different ways. Right now, you wouldn't even think about not putting the damper on what's going on in New York. That would be outlandish as it's going up, no doubt. But there are other parts of the country which we need to get a better feel for what is going on. And the way we do that is by increasing testing and identifying people who are infected, isolating them, getting out of circulation, and then do contact tracing. That's what we call containment. So you could do containment and maybe ease up a bit in one area, whereas in other areas where it's mitigation, all you got to do is put all your resources in there to help the people who are under this stressful situation.
So different solutions for different parts of the country. I got you. Different strategies for different parts of the country.
Yeah,
I get
exactly.
It. But then you have like, well, how long? And I get it. The answer is going to be depends where you are. I get it. But if it's California, and there you have the governor and the mayor discussing, the Los Angeles mayor, that it's going to be months. It's going to take months for them. And then you're hearing here in New York, Andrew says, the governor here says, we're 2 or 3 weeks from seeing the worst crush at the hospitals. I mean, it seems that the timeline is getting extended farther out, not that things are going better than expected anywhere.
Yeah. What you've got to do, Chris, you've got to be realistic, and you've got to understand that you don't make the timeline. The virus makes the timeline. So you've got to respond in what you see happen. And if you keep seeing this acceleration, it doesn't matter what you say, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you've got to go with what the situation on the ground is. So when people say it may take months, I think what people are talking about is how long it takes to go all the way down. But you may see in a relatively shorter period of time when you're seeing the inkling of the flattening and coming down. But, you know, you can't make an arbitrary decision until you see what you're dealing with. You need the data.
All right, so let me ask you some quick punch questions here. These I'm skeptical of these things, so obviously you'll set us straight about what's true. Vitamin C, vitamin D. You know, first it was these words I couldn't pronounce, deoxy, whatever, drug. And then we hear somebody dies from the drug. And then there's other drug therapies they're trying. Now it's vitamin C, vitamin D. Are any of these things something that we have any degree of confidence, and by we, I mean you, that can actually work in mitigating the effects of the extreme cases of this virus?
I think you have to separate the vitamins from drugs that are being touted as being effective or not. For example, vitamin C is a pretty good antioxidant. I mean, there are studies that say vitamin C is very good against mitigating the effects of certain infections, and others say there's no effect. It's essentially totally harmless unless you take a ridiculous amount. So I have no problem with vitamin C. There's some interesting situations about vitamin D. And in fact, Tom Frieden, who's a former CDC director, wrote an op-ed, I think yesterday, when he was talking about some interesting suggestions about various regions of the globe and respiratory infections that might be related to vitamin D. No definite proof, but again, you're not getting hurt. But when you're talking about a drug that might have some toxicity, that's a different thing. That's why you keep hearing me over and over again saying the best optimal way is to do a randomized controlled trial to determine as quickly as possible whether something works, and if it does, get it out there. If it doesn't, get it off the table.
So let me ask you something. New York, this 2 to 3 week window where there's going to be a crush. Forget about the timing. Forget about the when. Let's just deal with the reality. How frightening may it be for people living here and obviously watching all over the country of what they see at the hospitals? Do you think there's a chance that we're going to relive a Katrina-type event where we were down there reporting in front of the Superdome and there were people all lined up outside that place because they couldn't get in and they were sick and worse? Is that what overcapacity looks like? Is that what overwhelmed looks like?
You know, overwhelmed looks like that, but Chris, I don't think that's going to happen. I hope not. I mean, nothing is impossible, but the reason I say I don't think that's going to happen is because you're right. And I know that Governor Cuomo was speaking about a certain period of time where he's going to be running out. He's now getting help with ventilators, with masks, and others. Hopefully that will be enough. I think it will be to be able to match what he and others who are in a stressful situation as he are facing. But that's the reason why you've got to now put all of the cylinders going to try and keep up with this. Because the one thing you don't want is you don't want a situation where you run out of essential things that you need. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't want to scare anybody because I believe in the meetings that I've been in at the task force, you're talking about FEMA, you're talking about other organizations that are really geared to try and help out. You're getting private industry involved in making more of these things that we need. So we're putting a big push on.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's the last of that. So one more clip to play, and then it's going to be time for me to roll out. But this clip goes to it explains what happened when the last president that we had that seemed to me had a little bit of common sense. We had the H1N1 back in the day, and what he did to take care of that problem. There are some misleading facts about that. So, you know, if you're on and you see somebody put some nonsense up about what Obama did, just put in Obama and H1N1, and you'll get the facts on that situation. This is the last clip. It's not that long, but it tells you, it shows you, it gives you proof and facts, all that good stuff about how to handle a situation like this. And why the orange press bag would ever get rid of this department is just beyond me.
In the spring of 2009, public health officials were alerted to an unusual outbreak of influenza.
Tuesday we reported that we had confirmed two cases of influenza that were swine flu in children in California.
On April 23, 2009, the CDC announced that this strain of influenza had not been seen before in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. It was a new strain of flu.
Today, Mexico's Minister of Health confirmed that they have cases of swine influenza in people, and that they believe some of the people who were infected died from swine influenza.
The world was confronted with a new flu virus to which it appeared no one had immunity. The potential existed for a severe pandemic. The public health community responded.
Last night, I arrived in Washington and immediately after my swearing-in met with officials from the White House to discuss the national response to the flu outbreak.
Yesterday, we announced the release of material from our strategic national stockpile.
Currently, the FDA and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are developing virus reference strains. HHS and the Food and Drug Administration will monitor the manufacturing of a potential vaccine and conduct strict oversight to ensure that the vaccine is safe and effective for use. As a vaccine manufacturing is underway, the NIH will also conduct clinical trials to make sure that the best dosage and formulation of the vaccine is available.
Over the last week, my administration has taken several precautions to address the challenge posed by the 2009 H1N1 flu virus.
Those precautions included disseminating public health recommendations through a variety of media and developing a candidate vaccine virus in less than 3 weeks. By June, there were 18,000 cases of H1N1 flu in the U.S.
WHO has officially declared us to be in a pandemic.
In July of 2009, scientists and public health experts from across the country came together in a pan-flu summit at NIH to discuss the most effective ways to minimize the impact of the H1N1 flu.
We're aggressively planning for a vaccination program.
The National Institutes of Health directed clinical trials of the H1N1 flu vaccine beginning in August. Trials were conducted on adults, children, pregnant women, and individuals with underlying health conditions.
I believe this is something that this federal government, in this administration, is doing correctly. And I hope that the American people will support the government and support their fellow citizens by getting immunization to the H1N1 virus in the order that they are supposed to take it, and will follow up.
HHS announced it was making $350 million available in grants to state and local agencies for pandemic preparedness resources and activities. HHS and the public health community continued to spread the word on not spreading the flu.
As I said when we saw the first cases of this virus back in the spring, I don't want anybody to be alarmed, but I do want everybody to be prepared. We know that we usually get a second, larger wave of these flu viruses in the fall, and so response plans have been put in place across all levels of government. For all that we do in the federal government, however, every American has a role to play in responding to this virus.
The FDA has licensed the H1N1 vaccine from four of the five manufacturers. We also have data now that there's a good antibody response to the vaccines.
So we are now up to 76 children having died from the 2009 H1N1 virus. To put that in context, the past 3 years, the total pediatric influenza deaths ranged from 46 to 88.
Although the production and delivery of vaccine was slower than hoped, 3 million doses of nasal spray vaccine were available in October as state and local agencies began holding H1N1 flu shot clinics. Media campaigns encouraged the public to get vaccinated and answered questions about the risks and benefits of the vaccine.
So talk about ingredients, some of these words that raise concern.
Well, the main ingredient in the vaccine is a purified protein from the virus, okay, that is what stimulates you to have a response that can protect you against the virus.
If this H1N1 pandemic influenza virus had appeared in November or the beginning of December, we would have incorporated it into one of the components of the seasonal flu, and no one would be asking the question, is this a brand new vaccine for a brand new virus? Because the viruses change each year, and we change the vaccines each year.
In the month of November, H1N1 influenza was widespread in 48 states. People under the age of 24 accounted for one half of flu-related hospitalizations. The number of vaccine doses available grew from 35.6 million to 54 million 2 weeks later. By the beginning of December, about 46 million people had been vaccinated, and states reported fewer new cases of influenza.
We're going from a time where there was lots of disease and not enough vaccine to a time where disease is gradually decreasing and we're having a steady increase in the amount of vaccine that's available.
Many people are still susceptible to this virus and would benefit from vaccination. We want to avoid complacency. Today, I'm happy to say that we have a very good supply of the H1N1 vaccine all around the country. Going forward, the H1N1 virus is still circulating in the U.S., and we expect it to continue to circulate for some time. We need to stay vigilant.
Current estimates are that 15% of the U.S. population has been infected with the 2009 H1N1 virus, resulting in some 265,000 hospitalizations and 12,000 deaths. Between 72 and 81 million Americans were immunized for H1N1 flu by mid-February, including one-third of all children. The close cooperation between federal, state, and local agencies that allowed an effective response to the 2009 H1N1 flu makes the U.S. better prepared to meet public health challenges in the future.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Anybody with common sense, that's how you're supposed to take care of the problem. The problem that we have is that you got people, you know, us against them. And, you know, that's how you take care of that. So the next time you're online, somebody pops up that nonsense about Obama didn't do blah blah, just look it up and just give them the facts, and then they'll shut up. I had to do that a couple of times, and just shut them up. That's the way you're supposed to handle your situation. Not say it's a hoax. Not go play golf. Not brush it off because you're worried about the economy and other stuff. That's how you take care of a problem. So next week, I'll be back on at 7 o'clock. We're going to talk about religion and this coronavirus. It's just, you know, and I'm getting up stories for that one. And let me say this before I go, that whenever we have situations like this, the real religious people, a lot of them are always talking about this is the end of the world and blah, blah, blah. Look, it is not the end of the world. Don't go around telling people that nonsense, because if you tell kids that kind of crap, you're going to scare the hell out of them. Don't say anything like that, because it's not the end of the world. You know, it's a sickness that I think once we get a vaccine for it, I think it's going to be all right. I think it's going to be okay. sitting right here and say stuff like that, all you're doing is scaring people. You don't know when the world's going to end. I don't know when the world's going to end. This world has been spinning for millions of years. Nobody knows. I mean, if that's the case, why did the world end doing slavery, which is probably a whole lot worse than this? Why didn't the world end when we had Native American genocide? Why didn't the world end during World War I? Why didn't the world end during World War II? Why didn't the world end when we almost had nuclear war with Russia? Why didn't the world end during those things? Why is it going to end now all of a sudden? So don't go around telling people that nonsense, because all you're doing is scam people, and you don't need to be scamming. And we're going to talk about that next week with these religious nut jobs. You need to go sit their asses down somewhere. That's the end of the show for tonight. I'm on my way to work. Be safe. Take it easy. Like I said, wash your hands. Stay away from sick people. It's going to be all right. I think it's going to be okay, even with the incompetent asshats that we have running the government right now. I think we're going to be all right. But just take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week. Peace out.